Esther, chapter 121. A feast is being celebrated in the city of Shushan, the large and beautiful capital of the Persian kingdom. Thousands of the most distinguished Persian princes are gathered in the city. Daily, the elegant palace of the king is filled with guests. It is a feast which continues a long time. We read in the Bible that it lasted 180 days, a half year. Why was that necessary? What must they do in Shushan so many weeks? I will try to make it plain to you. Darius the king, who had given the Jews permission to finish building the temple, had died. His son Ahasuerus reigns at this time. His real name is Xerxes, but we will call him Ahasuerus because he is called that in the Bible. The Persian kingdom continually became mightier and larger. At this time it was divided into 127 provinces. Ahasuerus invited all the governors, the princes, and even the generals and commanders of his army and navy to come to the capital, for his plans are to again wage a war. He wants to conquer more nations. This time Greece must be subdued. When they all have arrived at Shushan, he discusses with his princes and generals how they should do this. Extensive plans are made. For that reason, this feast lasted 180 days. There were so many things to regulate. They needed months to do so. Every day, great banquets are being celebrated. At these banquets, they consider with each other what must be done. Finally, everything is ready. An enormous army is prepared for battle. A large fleet, manned with countless sturdy sailors, lies in the harbors. But before the king will march away with his tens of thousands of brave soldiers to that far country, and before the fleet will sail toward Greece, the king will make another brilliant feast for all the inhabitants of his capital. This is a farewell feast. After that, the fleet will go over the water and the army will go over the land toward Greece, where bitter fighting will take place. It is only natural that Ahasuerus shall obtain the victory. Of course, the Greeks will be defeated. Ahasuerus doesn't doubt that he will return the victor. But first, he wants to celebrate a substantial feast. He brilliantly decorated his palace. Everyone must see how wealthy his king is. Expensive materials in beautiful colors are hung on the walls. This cloth is made in white, green, and heavenly blue, hung on silver rings and fastened with purple cords. The roof rests upon marble pillars. The beds are of gold and silver. Everything shines and glitters with costly pearls and diamonds, which are worth a fortune. Look at the long tables. All the cups, plates, and pans are made of the finest gold. Isn't Ahasuerus rich? They eat and drink. Delicious. The most delicious foods are served by his many servants. They drink the choicest wine. No one is compelled to drink. Each one is free to decide how much he wants to eat and drink. The king gave that command. Still, it is an ungodly feast. Most of them drink themselves drunk. Oh no, these mighty ones do not live in the fear of the Lord. It is an ungodly, a pagan feast. Joy and gladness not only prevail in the palace of the king, but also in the palace of the queen. The most distinguished women of Persia are feasting in her palace. This farewell feast will last 7 days. Finally, the last day comes. Of course, this must be the most pleasant day. The king and his princes drink wine. too much wine. They again become drunk, and drunken people do not know what they are doing. Ahasuerus begins to do unwise, foolish things, which he would not have done at any other time. Now you should know the king had a very beautiful, clever wife. Her name was Vashti. On this last day, the king demanded Vashti to come to him in his palace. She had to put on her best clothing, besides putting the royal crown upon her head. He wanted to show off his clever wife. "Go," he commands seven of the highest chamberlains. "Go get the queen. I command her to come." A little later they return, but the queen is not with them. "Well, where is Vashti, the queen?" he asks sternly. His servants answer bashfully, "And she refused to come with us. She doesn't want to come." Children, Vashti is right in refusing. She also has a banquet in her palace. She also has guests. Must she forsake all of them? Can she? That would be impolite. Besides, she is ashamed to come among all those drunken men. No doubt, they all must have a good look at her. Of course, she will be wiser. She will not do it. She sends the messengers back to the king. When Ahasuerus hears her answer, he turns white with rage. His lips press together, his fists clench, and his eyes sparkle threateningly. That is an insult to him. "What?" he roars. "What? Does she refuse? So, doesn't she want to obey me? She will pay for her disobedience. She will be punished for it." All of the joy of feasting has disappeared. No further talking or laughing is heard. It has become exceedingly quiet. Dismayed and terrified, they all look at the king, who shakes from anger. Now there were seven wise princes with the king, who gave him advice in all difficult matters. "What do you advise me?" he asks of them. "What must be done with the queen? How must I punish her?" Inquiringly, he looks from one to the other. It is quiet for a moment, while they all are in deep thought. One of them answers, "King, Vashti is not worthy of being queen over Persia. You must no longer acknowledge such a disobedient, self-wise woman as your wife. Drive her away. Divorce her. Under no circumstances can she be queen any longer, for if it becomes known what has happened today, all the women will become disobedient to their husbands. Then not one wife will obey her husband. Vashti must be punished severely, and so it also will be a warning to others." The king listens attentively. From time to time he nods his head approvingly. When his advisor has finished speaking, the king says, "Yes, that is right. That is wise counsel. From this time forward, Vashti is no longer my wife. I do not want to see her again. Drive her away." "King Ahasuerus, this is not wise advice. Later you will regret it. If you hadn't drunk so much wine, it would not have happened. But because you are drunk, you have done foolish, unwise things." Children, drunken people always do things without good judgment. Have you ever seen a drunken man? You loathe it when you see him staggering along the street, yelling and singing. Did God create a person for that? No, indeed not. Man must live to the honor of God, but a drunkard lives to the dishonor of God and to the shame of himself. Therefore, it is such a great sin. Children, may the Lord keep you from getting drunk. The command of Ahasuerus is obeyed. Vashti is shamefully driven away. She is divorced. Queen Vashti did not deserve such treatment. No, she respected her name and honor highly. Girls, I hope you will do the same in your future lives. By this incident, the feast joy has come to a sudden end. The last day of the feast should have been the most pleasant, but it has ended differently due to the king's foolishness. All the guests leave the royal palace quietly and in silence. Soon this new law, which had been signed by the king, and wherein was written that every woman must obey her husband, is talked about throughout the entire kingdom. A few days later, Ahasuerus leaves. The large army marches away. The ground shakes from the thousands of footsteps. The air vibrates from their joyful shouts. A numerous fleet sails over the water, manned by thousands of soldiers. Ah, they are going to conquer Greece. Forward! Ahasuerus is sitting upon the throne in his royal palace at Shushan. He stares dejectedly into space, while his hands are under his head. Now and then he sighs heavily and sadly shakes his head. Ahasuerus? He went to march against Greece, didn't he? Certainly, but that was several months ago. He has returned. And did he obtain the victory? Has Greece been conquered and are they subjected? No. The outcome was altogether different from what the king had expected. His mighty army has been defeated. Thousands of his brave soldiers have been slain. His magnificent fleet has been nearly destroyed. Most of the ships have been sunk or burned, and many sailors met their deaths in the waves of the Mediterranean Sea. Their gay rejoicing is silenced. Death has cut off those young lives. Ahasuerus has lost the war. Mourning and sorrow prevail throughout his kingdom because of the tens of thousands who had gone to battle rejoicing and full of courage, but who will never, no, never return. The king broods and frets about the defeat. Oh, how nice, how joyful everything had been when he left. And now, misery and sadness everywhere. Vashti? The king frightens out of his meditations. Time and again he cannot help but think of her. In his thoughts he sees her friendly smile. Ah, if she were only with him, she would comfort him in his sadness. She surely would speak encouragingly to him. Just now he needs her so much. Oh, he had been so foolish. If he had not driven her away, it would be much better now. When he did so, he was so drunk, he didn't know what he was doing. The king regrets the action taken, but at present there is nothing to do about it. His courtiers notice the king is brooding. They can understand he is thinking of Vashti. Probably he has spoken to them about it. They are afraid the king will recall her, but he cannot, he may not. A law of the Persians may never be altered. They decide to help the king. King, they advise him, you must look for another wife. You must choose another girl and make her queen in the place of Vashti. They think if the king has another wife, he will forget Vashti. The king shouldn't have so much time to think about Vashti. Ahasuerus nods. Yes, that is good. He will do that. For a while, there is an inward desire in his heart for Vashti, but come, he must stop thinking of her. That can never be put to rights again. It is past. From the entire realm, girls are looked for. Girls who are beautiful, vigorous, and smart. Girls with a healthy color and a friendly smile upon their faces. From among them, the king must choose another wife. All these young girls must live in the palace for several months. There they receive the most delicious foods, so they will become healthier. Afterwards, they are brought one by one to Ahasuerus. Before they come to the king, they may dress themselves in the most beautiful clothing. Besides, they may choose the most costly gold and silver necklaces, earrings and bracelets, and adorn themselves with them. Nearly every one of them tries to make herself as beautiful as possible, with the hope the king will choose her. But when they come before Ahasuerus, he shakes his head. No, no. Among them all, there is not one girl he wants for a wife. Not one? Another girl is brought before the king. Doesn't she look plain? She did not adorn herself. She is clothed neatly and dignified. She enters with a pounding heart. When the king sees this young daughter, he braces himself. Yes, he thinks. This girl must become my wife. She will become queen. Who is she? Her name is Esther. She is an orphan, which means she has neither father nor mother. Poor child. Still, she was not alone in this world. No, happily not. She had a cousin, Mordecai, who took her into his home. Mordecai cared for her as a father. He loved her as a mother. Oh, she lived very comfortably in the home of her cousin. She lacked nothing. But because she was so beautiful, she was taken from the home of her cousin and brought into the royal palace. And now it is she who is chosen to be queen. She was not proud. Oh, no. She did not use any golden bracelets, earrings, and necklaces. Everyone loved her because of her simplicity, and with her plainness, she was the most beautiful girl of them all. Girls, this is a lesson for you. Do not adorn yourself with all kinds of things. You may think this makes you beautiful, but it is not so. On the contrary, remain plain. That is the best adornment. However, Esther is no Persian girl. She was a Jewess. What? A Jewess? One of the exiles? Yes. Who would ever have thought it? But she did not reveal it. No, she was silent about that. She didn't hide it because she was ashamed of her nation, but it was better not to say anything about her nationality at this time. That could be done later. Thus, King Ahasuerus has made his choice. Afterward, he makes a great feast. They celebrate a wedding feast in the palace. And didn't the king begin to regret his choice? No, he loved Esther very much. She took care of him, and he forgot Vashti, his former wife. Every day a plain-clothed man walks back and forth before the palace of the king. He often sits in the gate of the royal palace. Who is he? Why does he continually walk there? This man is Mordecai, the cousin of the queen. Mordecai has not forgotten Esther, his cousin. Now that Esther is no longer in his home, it has become empty and quiet. He misses her in everything. You can easily understand he is anxious to know how his cousin will fare. He wants to know what will happen to her. How surprised he must have been when he heard that she had been chosen queen. Since that time, he asks about her welfare every day. But neither has Esther forgotten her cousin. Of course, a great separation has come between these two. Esther is the popular queen of the mighty Persian Empire. Mordecai is a common Jew. However, they still love each other. One day, Mordecai hears that two courtiers of Ahasuerus have made plans to kill the king. Their names are Bigthan and Teresh. We read in the Bible they were wroth with Ahasuerus. We do not know how Mordecai obtained this knowledge. As soon as he knows the life of the king is in danger, he immediately warns Esther. She frightens when she hears this. She quickly goes to the king and tells him, saying at the same time that Mordecai had heard of the plot. When Ahasuerus hears this from his wife, he looks up in surprise. He gives orders to investigate this matter immediately, and indeed, it is found to be true. Both of these evil workers are imprisoned and hanged. The life of Ahasuerus is spared. The king writes this event in the Chronicles, that is to say, it is written in the Book of Records so that it would not be forgotten. However, Mordecai does not receive a reward for this noble deed. Look over there. Do you see the man who is leaving the royal palace? He has been to visit the king. Probably he has talked about many different matters with the king. Slowly and in a stately manner, he walks to the gate. Proudly he looks around. He is far too proud to greet anyone. He feels he doesn't have to greet anyone. Why, no. Everyone must greet him. Who is this man? He is Haman, a friend of Ahasuerus. He hasn't been his friend very long, but recently he began coming to the palace every day. The king has made him great and powerful. Suddenly he has become one of the most distinguished princes of the Persian Empire. Yes, the king has advanced him above all the other princes. Everyone must bow before him. Haman is an Amalekite. He is one of the descendants of Agag, the king of the Amalekites, who should have been slain by Saul, but who had been spared by him. Do you still remember that? Finally, Samuel, the old judge, slew this king. So Haman came from the royal family of the Amalekites, and now at once he has come to great popularity. The king had commanded that everyone must kneel before Haman, which means they must render him godly honor. See him going through the gate to the outskirts of the city. Every person who sits along the way rises and kneels respectfully. Haman smiles happily when he sees this. He glows with pride. He goes onward as a peacock. Does everyone get up? Do they all kneel? No, one man remains sitting. He is Mordecai the Jew. He refuses to obey the command of Ahasuerus. He will not kneel before a person. He only kneels before God. This does not happen once. No, it happens constantly. It seems as though Haman does not notice Mordecai, but the other people at the gate see that he does not bow down to Haman. They ask Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's commandment?" Calmly, Mordecai answers, "I may not kneel before a person. The Lord has forbidden it, for I am a Jew." A derisive laugh rings out loudly at the gate. "We would like to see the outcome," they say ridiculingly. "Only the command of the king counts, so you too must obey." They tell Haman that Mordecai will not kneel before him because Mordecai belongs to the Jewish people. Before this, the proud Amalekite did not notice it. But the next time he goes through the gate, he takes particular notice, and sure enough, it is true. Calmly, Mordecai remains seated, while all the others fall respectfully to the earth. When Haman sees this, he is filled with fury and anger. Oh, wild hatred burns within him against this obstinate Jew. He seeks revenge, but is not satisfied in having only Mordecai punished. Oh no, that is far too little. An evil, devilish plan arises within him. He will have all the Jews slain. Then that nation will vanish from the earth. The old hatred of the Amalekites against the Jewish people also rises within him. He will avenge himself once and for all of these enemies of his nation. He decides to speak about it to the king. He addresses Ahasuerus in a friendly manner. "King, a self-wise, high-minded, and obstinate people live among all the other people in your land. They have other laws than we. They will not obey the laws which you make. They are troublemakers and rebels. Give me permission to kill every one of them, little and big, young and old. You no longer will be troubled with them. Besides, out of gratitude, I will give you 10,000 talents of silver." He tries to bribe the king. 10,000 talents of silver is a large sum of money, many millions of dollars. He anxiously awaits an answer. He has told a lie. It was just the Jews who were not rebellious. But here the devil tries, by using Haman as his instrument, to wipe out the entire nation of the Jews. They must be exterminated. For what reason? The devil knows that someday the Lord Jesus must be born from the Jewish people, and Satan wants to prevent this. If he is successful in keeping the Lord Jesus from being born, the promises of God would be disannulled. Satan tried it when Pharaoh cast all the boys in the Nile. Of course, Satan can never win. The king hearkens to this desire of his best friend and grants Haman his request. He says with a smile, "It is good. If they are such a stubborn, disobedient people, it is better that they disappear from the earth. Otherwise, it could be that they would become dangerous for my realm. Do with them as you like. You need not give me the money. You may keep it." As evidence of this friendship toward Haman, the king takes his signet ring from his finger and gives it to him. "This token means I give you power to wipe out the entire nation. Every law necessary to that end you can seal with this ring." This makes it very easy for Haman. He leaves the king with a deep bow. A triumphant smile is on his face. As he goes through the gate, he sees that again Mordecai does not kneel, while every other person does. A false grin comes upon his face. He thinks, "Just wait, fellow, I will get you and your nation too." He acts immediately. First, he must find what day to execute his plan. Haman was a heathen, a superstitious heathen. Upon his orders, the lot is cast. Sometimes the Israelites also cast lots, but they would ask the Lord to guide it. However, Haman does not do so. He calls upon the idols to determine by means of the lot when it would be the best time to carry out his plan. The lot fell in such a way that it would be 11 months before the massacre would begin. Haman thinks the idols appointed him that day. The proud fool knows no better. In reality, the God of heaven and earth governed and guided it, not for the good of Haman, but for the good of the poor Jewish people who would be wiped out without pity if God did not prevent. This casting of the lot would turn to the destruction and fall of Haman, but Haman does not know it. When once the day is set for the horrible murder, the laws are written in every language of each province, which is in the extensive Persian kingdom. The words of this law are sealed by Haman with the signet ring of the king, which means nothing can be changed in these laws. These laws are sent to every governor and ruler in the entire realm. Formerly, this was not done so easily as today. They had no trains, automobiles, or airplanes. And these sealed laws were given into the hands of runners, who would take them to their destination. Runners are men who can run very fast. They are accustomed to this, therefore they do not tire so quickly. This is written in these laws. Upon the 13th day of the 12th month, every Jew, from the youngest to the oldest, the little children as well as the women, must be killed in one day. This caused great fright among the Jews. Oh, now everything is lost. They must all die without exception. Also in Shushan, the capital, the new law is made known. Many Jews who did not go with Joshua and Zerubbabel still lived in Shushan. Indeed, the Jews in the land of Canaan would likewise perish, for there a Persian governor also reigns in the name of the king. We read in the Bible that the city of Shushan was perplexed, which means the Jews mourned and lamented. Thousands of Jews bent their knees that night and entreated the Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for deliverance, for help in their dire need. They did not know what to do. For them it was lost, hopelessly lost. But with God all things are possible, and therefore they prayed to the living God for deliverance. Would there be deliverance? That same night, Haman and the king sat together in the royal hall. They talked and laughed, enjoying themselves together. One glass of wine after the other was emptied. It wasn't long before they were drunk. Both of them became very jolly. Indeed, sorrow did not reign with Ahasuerus and Haman.